Well, good morning. Welcome to Crossroads. Welcome to Game Changers. Some of you are coming in here going, gosh, it's a little like a deja vu. Yes, it's the set that we had about 18 months ago when our church embarked on a journey called the Game Change Campaign, where we committed above and beyond what we regularly get for 3 years for big initiatives to change things in our city. Different sites of Crossroads, making CityLink a reality, medical care in South Africa, and rescuing children who are under forced prostitution in India and rehabilitating them. And so we're popping back above the ground right now because we want to encourage people who've been faithful. We want to just give you insights of what's happening. And I know this has been a difficult, faith-stretching journey for many of us. And we want to enlist more people. We want to enlist you to be a game changer. We're going to be defining what a game changer is. And I just encourage you to just sit back today. We're going to have some comforting words, some challenging words. And I think we're all going to be doing some growing today and over the next several weeks. You know, we actually are, as a church, changing things. We're not just amassing more people. We're changing things. We're on the cusp of changing even more. The last week we ended a series when we talked about what it's like to be an abandoned orphan versus a treasured child, and we made many of us aware of the foster need issue in our city. 400 kids not having a place to stay while they hopefully wait to be reintroduced to their biological family. And we just have had some informational sessions. Just information, no big commitment. We've had 115 people show up to try to figure out whether or not God is calling them to foster. In fact, the response has been so overwhelming, we're going to add another session. So we have two more sessions for you just to explore. No commitments by going, just if you want to explore. And I'll tell you what, I think we're on the verge of changing this. I do. I think we're going to be able to wipe out the foster care problem, just Crossroads and other churches here in our city. That's awesome. Come on. That is awesome. We're going to talk today about how we don't want to just pray about things, how we don't want to think about things, how we at Crossroads, we work about things. And that's what we're going to talk about in a moment. And one of the ways we do that is through different sites of Crossroads, bringing people in relationship with God and having a wider base, a wider infrastructure to impact the world. So that's the issue or the little initiative we're looking at today. And let's check out what it looks like to have sites in Oakley, sites in Mason, sites in Florence, and other places not even yet mentioned. Check this out.
If it weren't for Crossroads Mason having been formed, I don't really know where I would be right now. I had a little bit of exposure to a couple different church communities, but it was never something that I had really adopted. You would probably could argue that I was an atheist, although I held on to the belief that maybe there was some other power at work in the universe.
We really want to engage people who don't know who Jesus is, who have given up on church, but not necessarily on God. And we want to help them understand that we speak with a different dialect. We speak in a language that is unique and helps them to really figure out that who I thought Jesus was is really different than who he actually is. And it draws them into the things that we're doing around here that just impact so many different people.
After coming for the first few weeks, I began to volunteer. I actually joined a community group and really began to read the Bible and understand other people's experiences, and I wanted to be more involved in my community. And, you know, to me, this was very much my community. That's what set in motion a lot of the things that led to where I'm at now.
When we were really getting serious about multi-site, we went and just kind of pulled some data to see the people who call Crossroads home, who are attending today, where do they live? And we discovered that people come to our current locations as far south, you know, past Union, Kentucky, on north, close to Dayton. That might be great for a couple who's coming on their own, but when they live so far away from any location that we have, it lessens the likelihood that their friends who are their neighbors live next to them in their general neighborhood are going to want to make that drive, that substantial drive, to come to Mason or to Oakley.
That's a lot for a family with two kids to make that kind of drive and commitment. And even though I would make that commitment now, I really wouldn't have had any reason in my own mind that I should.
The thing that we're about most is helping our friends who don't know Jesus come into relationship with him. And so ideally what we want to look at is finding locations, planning them throughout the city that are 15-minute drive times for where we already have an existing pocket of people who are familiar with who Crossroads is.
There's not a lot of construction work around the region right now. Around the world, there isn't a lot, but there is in this little corner of the Cincinnati region because of our faithfulness, because our strength and our courage. We stood up and said, no, we're going forward. We're going forward and we're trying to reach more people and bless more people. And that's what multi-site is about. It's about going to where people are to reach and bless them. Jesus went to where we were. He came into our neighborhood.
Specifically, what this site means to me is that my family is going to have a place where literally it's going to be 5 minutes from our house, and we're excited to be able to invite our friends, to be able to invite our neighbors, and just know that they're going to have a place where driving 30 minutes is no longer an excuse.
We went on the Game Change campaign, and one of the things we were really excited about was the multi-site and the fact that it came to Florence in our backyard. It's just something that really excited my wife and I. We have so many friends and neighbors who have inquired about Crossroads and coming to church with us, but not too many of them wanted to make that trek across the river.
I've been trying to get the guys I work with to come to Oakley for years, and they just won't come. And now that we're right around the corner, I'm really excited about this.
Good morning. How's it going, guys? Did anyone else get fired up when they saw that video of that wall coming down? How cool was that? And I want to tell you what also fires me up is that as I look at this room, to think that literally in just less than 6 months, we are going to have a similar room in Florence that is full of people that are hearing the message of Jesus in a way they can understand. That is something I get very, very excited about, and I hope you guys get excited about as we are on this multi-site journey. And which is really, the goal is reaching all of our city, not sitting back on our heels just saying, gosh, you know, we're big enough, we're doing well, but we are not going to be happy until we reach all of our city and give everyone the opportunity to hear the message of Jesus in a way they can understand. Now, we don't have a lot of stories yet in Florence, but I do have some statistics that I want to share with you just to kind of give you an idea on how progress is going.
Terry, do you want music for this?
Man, let's rock it out. Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. To date, we've had 33,000 man hours of production. I accidentally said 33 hours yesterday. That was, people are looking at me like, 33 hours, that's not good. 217 different workers, 130 tons of structural steel. And most importantly, 56 toilets, including 14 men's urinals.
That seems a little out of balance, Terry.
Are you feeling cheated?
Like that was, well, yeah. What if I'm on the other side of the building?
And I think some of that is because there are just toilets in Kids Club, and actually Kids Club has a lot of those toilets.
All right. So they're like little toilets, though.
Yes.
They're not full size.
And you know what? I am excited to have more stories like Dustin's that we saw where people are experiencing authentic community in their neighborhood. And so I am excited that. And no matter what site you normally attend, no matter where you live in the city, if you live towards Mason, towards Florence, or here in Oakley, we want you to be excited about the multi-site vision. And I want to give you an opportunity to come and hear more about it at Florence this coming Saturday. In your program, it says show up between 10 and 2. We're going to give a tour of the site, and we're going to give everyone a chance just to really hear what is Crossroads about when we talk about multi-site. So very excited. We hope you can come join us. And
Terry, will there be a scavenger hunt for 56 toilets at this tour?
There will be now.
Fantastic.
And we hope that you find them all. We will come up with fabulous prizes for people, Robbie. We will do
and a
that.
Grand prize for the person who uses all of them.
Actually, let me correct that. There are some that are not working yet, so do not use the ones that aren't working yet. That would just be gross. So, hey, guys, we hope you come out and join us. And, yeah, we'll see you then.
Hey, we're going to have an opportunity to be generous right now. If you've been around here and your roots are here at Crossroads, this is an opportunity for us to say to God, God, I trust you. I believe that you're my provider and that you will continue to provide for me. And so I joyfully give back to you because I believe that you are who you say you are. I don't do it out of obligation. And if you're new, we just want to be really clear and upfront. We don't want your money. What we want for you is to sit back and experience and just take in what we're talking about and consider the implications of these things. And as this is happening, we're going to look at a bit of a profile of a game changer. This man's life and his convictions and how he responded to those things dramatically has changed how each one of us connects with God in this modern day. So take a look.
Salvation is not earned by good deeds or paid indulgences, but received as a free gift through faith in Jesus. I cannot and will not recant anything, for to go against conscience is neither right nor safe. Here I stand, I can do no other, so help me God. On God in true faith, earnestly from the heart, will certainly be heard and will receive what they have asked and desired. There comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe, nor politic, nor popular. But he must take it because his conscience tells him it is right. Ich bin Martin Luther.
Martin Luther was he was a human being. He had problems. He had faults. He's not necessarily a personal hero of mine, but I tell you what, he changed the game. Doesn't matter if you're Protestant. Doesn't matter if you're Catholic. Your religious views are influenced by him. It's a guy who was reading these no-brainer things in the Bible as a Catholic monk about this idea of the grace of God and noticing he wasn't teaching that and that wasn't present in the church in which he resided. In fact, he saw St. Peter's Basilica being built, and I've been there. It was built with a building campaign, and the Catholic theology believes there's an intermediary place between hell and heaven, and you go to purgatory, and the way that the Pope was building this thing was by having people buy their loved ones out of purgatory. And so he just nailed 95 thoughts to a door to say, hey, let's just talk about these things. He wasn't trying to be inflammatory. He wasn't trying to be controversial. He was just saying, these are things we need to talk about. He was struck by how he was walking up and down marble steps on his knees to try to atone for his sin because he had done bad things, beating himself with a whip, realizing, how does the grace of God fit into this? Whether it's Vatican II, which has been impacted by it, whether it's people who are in Protestantism, he changed the game for how people see very clear things in the Bible that hadn't seen them up to that point. We're talking this series about how all of us can change the game. We don't try to necessarily. We just see something that people don't see, and we move forward. Let's pray about that. God, I pray that you would help us to see your character, see your heart, and see your opportunity. Today, I pray that you would speak to us, and I even pray that for many of us, you would wreck us. You would cause us to feel things that we hadn't felt. I pray that my heart would be used and that you would use my mouth to speak the things that are on your heart. And I pray these things according to your name. Amen. Well, as I said, 18 months or so ago, we started a Game Change campaign to fund things that were important to the heart of God, and we gave things and committed things above and beyond what we regularly give, and we made that name Game Change Campaign because we were struck by an article by Malcolm Gladwell in the New Yorker magazine. And when we did that whole series, that was sort of a nouveau topic, a new phrase, game change, game changer. Certainly you'd heard it before, but it wasn't a common thing. It was really fresh. I don't know if you've noticed, but in the last 18 months or so, everybody's talking about game change all the time. It's like the new buzzword in our society. Just go ahead and Google game change, and you'll find all kinds of things. You'll find HBO has a new series called Game Change, where they're looking at the failed presidential bid of McCain and Palin, and we've lost the idea of what a game change is. A game change is when you see something others hadn't seen, you do something that no one's willing to do, and fundamentally things shift. I'm sorry, McCain and Palin's failed presidential candidacy was not a game changer. It was just another failed political candidacy. Nothing game changer about it at all. I've heard, and you can find about Apple's iOS 5 operating system and Facebook's new premium ads as being game changers for the marketing industry. No, it's just a new iteration of how to get you and I to buy things that we don't necessarily want. You'll find that shale gas is now the game changer in energy. It's not a game changer. It's the latest iteration of fossil fuels. Nothing game changer about it at all. You'll hear about how a local car dealer is doing a game changing thing where they're taking another car dealer's best price and they'll knock, I think it's another $500 off it. This is a game change, so the ads say. No, it's not a game change. It might be a good idea, but you're just shifting the way you make profit from one way to another. Nothing game change about it at all. Yet God does things in people's lives that changes your game. When you go from being an abandoned orphan to a treasured child, when you go from working on your own to atone for your sin and seeing that God has done it for you, when you go from being a self-centered person to a God-centered person because of the power of God, he changes your game. And then what he does is he enlists you in the family business. He enlists you in the family business of being a blessing in the world and bringing other people into relationship with him. Six marks we're looking at game changers. Number one we're looking at is game changers are dissatisfied with the status quo. Game changers are not happy with the way things are right now. Everybody else is. No one thinks it can change. Everyone's good to go. Just keep hitting the same nail. But game changers step back and say, whoa. Why is it this way? I don't like it that it's this way. One of my favorite game changers in the Bible is the prophet Nehemiah. Old Testament prophet in the nation of Israel is constantly seemingly in and out of slavery or in and out of exile when they would have an occupying country and they would kick them out of their capital city. And so right now they're in exile to Babylon. Nehemiah actually is the cupbearer for the king of Babylon, and the king is starting to release the captives out of exile to go back and inhabit the holy city of Jerusalem. And as Nehemiah's friends are going to Jerusalem, they're sending him back letters that say, hey, all the great wall that goes around the city, it's actually broken down. It's broken down. And Nehemiah hears this, and he is not satisfied. He is rocked to his core. Here's what it says in Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 4 and following. As soon as I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I continued fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, O Lord, God of heaven, the great and awesome God who keeps covenant and steadfast love with those who love him and keep his commandments, let your ear be attentive and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant. He sits down and he weeps. It's not just that he's dissatisfied with the status quo. Many people have seen this, but he takes it personally. One thing that happens is when you are dissatisfied with the status quo, you are emotionally wrecked. There is emotional wreckage that comes to you. This isn't just the fact of the walls are down so enemies will be able to have a siege on us or will be able to overtake us. This is Jerusalem's pride. This would be like us in Cincinnati to learn that the museum center is in disrepair. It's part of our civic pride, or that the Roebling Bridge is broken down. We'd say, oh my goodness, it's Cincinnati, and these things represent our pride, our heritage, our city. And so Nehemiah is struck to his core on this. He is emotionally wrecked. He's devastated. Have you ever been wrecked? Have you ever been wrecked? Now, all of us have different emotional bandwidth, so what's wrecked for one person isn't going to be wrecked for another person. All of us have this, but you know it when it happens to you. I remember very clearly the first time I was wrecked. I was 16 years old, and I was invited to this weekend camp, and for the first time I heard what it meant for Jesus to have a relationship with me. I learned the difference between the religion of Christianity and a relationship with God. Totally different things. And when I came into relationship with Christ, this ministry that helped me see this is named Young Life, and they would have these clubs. You would invite people over to your house every week. There would be a different place, and it was kind of fun and stupid things, and there was some little talk from the Bible, and it was a meaningful time, and they asked me to host it at my house shortly after I'd come to relationship with Jesus. I said, that's fine. So I wanted everybody I knew to have a relationship with Jesus. I couldn't, once this happened to me, I just had this thing of, wow, this is no longer about whose spirituality is right, whose religion is right, what's this mean, what's that mean. When you feel the love of God overwhelm you, when you feel God come inhabit your world, when you understand that he gives you grace, it's a game changer. And you imagining someone living without that is trying to imagine somebody living without water. You just go, how can that be? So I'm gathering everybody I play football with, trying to get to my house, and you know, it was a big old meeting, and they asked me to tell my story. I stood up to tell my story, and as I was talking about what was taking place in me, all of a sudden I just came unglued. I just started bawling. 16 years old, and I had never cried in my life. Well, other than when I got spanked as a little kid, I cried then. But 16 years old, I'm now finding my, and I would cry very frequently that way. But I was weeping in front of people. I was like, and I was undone. I couldn't believe this had come over me. What happened is I saw people and I was wrecked because I wanted them to have what God had done for me. One of my friends I invited, his name was Bob. He was sort of this manly guy. He was a silver glove champion of Pittsburgh. And we went afterwards to debrief at McDonald's. Everyone would go to McDonald's. We smashed the salt and pepper shakers. And as we were there, he came up to me and I was kind of embarrassed that, you know, I just made a fool of myself publicly by crying. And he came up to me and he had this real somber look on his face. And he said, hey, Bri, what happened back there at your house? He said, was that God? I said, yeah, that was God. That marked me. I was wrecked. And I can't look at anybody without wondering, do you know the God who created you? I can't go through a drive-thru. I can't hear somebody who's learned something without saying, do you know the one who has died for you and wants to bring you into a treasured relationship? It wrecked me. It defines everything. I just can't have philosophical debate about how's this and how's that and who you believe this. I'll do that, but it's personal. This is a game changer. Another time I was emotionally wrecked going over to South Africa. And first time I would make a trip inside of a house, do a home visit with somebody who's in the latter stage of AIDS. It wrecked me. It utterly wrecked me. And we would go to house after house, and every time I've been to South Africa, I've done this, and I find the same time, every time I sit in the seat in the van, and when we stop outside the house, it's like I have my feet in concrete. I don't want to get up because I know it awaits me. A scene where somebody is withered to skin and bone, and I'll just have to wrestle with God of how in the world. It wrecks me. I remember being on the way back from India. We were in a little cab, a little car coming back from one of the homes, and I was asking how there aren't more of these aftercare homes. Why there aren't more girls rescued out of forced sex slavery? And found out there was a crisis with number of aftercare homes. So why rescue girls when you can't put them any place to rehabilitate them? And as I was interacting with Gary Haugen, the founder of International Justice Mission, and Don Jared, his right-hand guy in India, I just said, why? What needs to happen here? As they talked through this, I just had a very personal time with God where he just wrecked me. I said, God, I will give my life to solving this aftercare crisis. I would do that. I wasn't satisfied that it could just continue the way it is. Whenever somebody changes anything, it starts with you being wrecked. With you emotionally and whatever your bandwidth is going, oh, can't have this. Now, Nehemiah is completely undone. And the king notices what's happening with him, why he's acting this way. And look what happens. The king said to me, why is your face sad seeing you're not sick? You look awful, but I know you're not sick. What's going on? And Nehemiah says, why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruins? Let letters be given me to the governors of the province beyond the river that they may let me pass through, and a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple and for the wall of the city and for the house that I shall occupy. He goes directly from being dissatisfied with being wrecked, with realizing he's got a job to do. He's got a job to do. And in order to rebuild this city, to rebuild these walls, it's going to take resources. When you are a game changer, you realize there is always a need for resources. You go from being emotionally wrecked to gathering resources. Nehemiah says that. Hey, give me a letter so I can take it to where your forests are and I can get timber. He gathers resources. Let me tell you something. Anything that you will ever want to change will always take money. Perhaps God changing you does not take money because it's a free gift. And then what he does in you beyond that, it will always cost. I hear people once in a while go, gosh, why is Crossroads always like having people give money? Why is it that? Why? Because we are changing the city. We believe that the city of Cincinnati will be substantively and significantly different in our lifetime. We don't want to just talk about things in South Africa and India. We want to change it. We realize that anything that needs change always takes money in your life. I'm telling you right now, there's nothing that you are ever going to change that's not going to take money. Nothing. You're saying, gosh, I really would like to date people. Guess what? It's going to take money. Gonna take money. And I say, gosh, I really need to get in shape. Gonna take money. You're gonna have to buy a gym membership or at least a DVD and follow along in the privacy room. It's going to take money. Gosh, I need to learn more. Gonna have to buy some books. You're gonna have to get a library membership. You're like, gosh, I gotta change my marriage. It sucks. Gonna take date nights. It's gonna take counseling. I'm not paying for counseling. That's why your marriage sucks, because you're not willing to put resources into it. I want to do that. Honestly, think about this. There's not a single thing that you will ever change that will not take resources. And so we don't apologize at all. Recognize that when God enlists you in his business, his family business of changing and blessing the world, it always takes resources. Now, here's the good news. We've changed the game on how we do funding around here. We've never had a financial goal. We've never stated a financial goal in 15 years. Never done that. Normally, the way the game is played, you put a thermometer up on stage, say, here's what we need. Let's fill in the thermometer. Never had a thermometer. Will never happen. Let me just ease your tension if you're newer here to Crossroads. you in the midst of this journey over the next 6 weeks, a spiritual journey to help you connect with God. For those of us who have already connected, a spiritual journey to help you just get encouraged. Let me just tell you, no one is going to call you and give you a fair share number. Never done that, never will. No one is going to send you an email saying this is what we've never done that. That's the way the game is normally played, and none of us are generous when that happens. We just want all of us to be able to connect with God. We're connect with God, and some of us, we're going to hear from God. Way to go. Be encouraged. Just keep going. Some of us, we're going to help you connect with God, and you're going to hear things. Maybe you're going to get wrecked for the first time. Maybe you're going to hear Him want something out of you for the very first time or to a new degree. And some people have been generous enough to share their stories. And let's hear Brenda's story. Check her out.
My mom and dad spent everything they made. They made a decent salary, and they spent it all. They viewed their money as their own. Consequently, that's how I live my life. It's my money. I'm earning it, and it's mine. Then I see things in the Bible that say it all belongs to God. And I'm asking for 10%. And I'm thinking, no, 10%. And then I'm like, okay, I'll give 10% of what I get, which is net. And I do that for a while. And then he's like, no. It's all mine. I just keep hearing, it's all mine, and I want 10%, and it comes off the top. So I start doing that begrudgingly. Then I come here, and Crazy Campaign comes along. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm not even okay with the tithing thing here. How am I going to do more? So then I sit down and try to figure out, okay, how much more can I eke out? And it was me deciding, not asking God, what do you want? It was a very, very disappointing experience for me because I was not committed to God. My heart was not in the right place. So I was not able, or was not even able to finish that commitment. If anything else came up that I needed that money for, then I used it. Here comes another campaign. Number one, Brian starts talking about a spiritual journey. And I'm like, yeah, right. This is not a spiritual journey. This is about money. And I immediately start saying to God, I can't give any more money. By that time, I'm consistently tithing, consistently. I'm consistently tithing. I'm giving my 10%. And I say to God, I don't have anything else I can give. Please don't ask me for any more money. And then I felt really comfortable, or felt a little better, because Brian said from the stage, it's a spiritual journey. It's about you and God and money and what He wants you to do with it. He said, God may not want any more from you. He might say, you're doing great. I appreciate what you're doing. I don't want you to give any more. You can just stay where you are. And I'm like, yes, 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 I'm off the hook. I can just stay where I am. God does not, I know, I just knew that was right. God doesn't want any more from me. Yes, I don't have to give any more. But I keep coming every week, listening to the messages, and God just kept convicting me. He showed me, not huge things, but He showed me it all belongs to me. And I just want you to put it out there. I might not take any, but I want you to be willing to give it to me. And I was amazed to see that there were things that I could give up. I was really, really quite astounded by that. And I was amazed that there were things that He said, okay, you can keep those. You know, I don't want that. You may continue to do that. So it really was a spiritual journey. I had decided in my mind, if I give up these things that He's asked me to give up, this is how much I can give. This is how much I can give to Game Change. This is how much is going to be freed up if I give up the things that He's asked me to. So I had that amount in my mind. I heard God say a different number. And I'm like, oh, no, I can't do that. And he clearly said, I know you can't. And I said, okay, God, I'm writing this down in obedience to what you're saying to me, to what I think I hear you saying. It has to be from you because I would never, I would not, that amount would not come to mind. So I'm writing this down. I'm pledging this, but you will have to do it because I do not know where this money's coming from. And it didn't happen right away. I was still just thinking, is this really going to happen? Is this really going to happen? Where is this money coming from? And slowly, an amount of money would come in. I'm like, yes, game change. So every time there's more coming in than what God has said I can spend for myself, it goes to game change. It goes to game change. It has flowed in. It has just flowed in. And God has done it, and He is awesome. To only have $146 left to pay from a 3-year commitment is just, every time I think about it, it just blows my mind. It really does. I mean, He has asked me to do this, and He has done it. He has provided for me to do this. And what I have given is what He has given to me.
Isn't that awesome? Awesome. What I love about her story is just how God grew her through that. God is growing all of us through this campaign. We're giving opportunities for Him to continue to grow us. It's inspiring. It's encouraging. It's part of why we're doing this, to encourage us. One of our means of encouragement is we love to hear stories of what God's doing in you. And we've had some people filling out these things. You got them when you came in today. And a Sharpie, if any moment today you want to fill it out, we're going to have the opportunity to hand it in later on. Like, here's some things people have filled out that's very encouraging. God has saved me from depression and alcoholism. God has opened my heart to the idea of adoption or foster care when He's ready. God has rescued me from myself, took away the pain of rape, and gave me new hope. My pain was His to keep. My forgiveness was a gift from Jesus Christ. It just goes on and on. Man, that is the things that God does. He changes our game. And then He enlists us in the things that He's always been doing. And see, money, just like money is needed to change everything, money is a muscle for ministry. Money is a muscle for ministry. It's a weapon to be used, to be thrown against things that aren't the right way. We are 42% of the way through the Game Change campaign. 42% of the way through. We've got 35% of the commitments that are in. We had $48 million committed. So we've got so far $16.8 million that are in. So far we've spent, with the four initiatives, $12 million. We've got about $4 million and change that's in the bank right now, but it's going to be spent really, really quickly, because over the next few months, we've got two buildings going simultaneously that are coming into the most intensive times of cash. We're going to be spending it over the next couple of months, next 3 months or so, another $12 million. And to do that, we're going to be tapping into a credit line that we have for short-term cash to do that. And then we're going to be paying all of that off as we continue to fulfill our commitments, and then continue to go forward and knock other things off, which has always been the plan that we've talked about from the beginning. And I have no apologies to make in talking about this, because, my goodness, this is just a fun, exciting thing. How often you get to be part of something that's changing something. I believe our city is going to be different as a result of our faithfulness. I believe girls, people in South Africa are going to have different lives. Resources are these weapons that are doing that. And what I love about it is we're in a church, and we're with people to your right and left who don't just think about things, but we do things. Nehemiah does this. He is wrecked. He goes out and gathers resources, and then he gets a bunch of people around him, and they go and get things done. You cannot change the game in and of yourself. Martin Luther didn't do it in and of himself. There's a bunch of people around him that rallied to the same cause. And so Nehemiah is getting all these different Jews to come together to rebuild the walls of their city. Let's take a look at what it says in Nehemiah 4. So we built the wall, and the wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. They're working, they're building it up. Why? Because they have a mind to work. It's one of the things I love about you, one of the things I love about being part of this church. We've got a mind to work. You know, we don't just pray about things. We don't just debate things. We don't think about things. We work about things. I've been involved with churches that are loving, debating how many angels can dance on the head of a pin and whose interpretation of this verse is exactly the right interpretation, and who's right and who's wrong, and you got to do this. Man, I love that we can, yes, basic stuff of the grace of God, receive Jesus, yes, basic. Okay, let's go. Chop, chop, chop. Let's get about loving on people. Let's get about changing things, because this is what God does. I love that being here. Love it. And when we do these things, there's a lot of criticism that comes our way. No one criticizes somebody who sits back and philosophizes. No one criticizes somebody who sits back and just has their own little holy huddle. I mean, we open ourselves up to criticism because we go, we move. Nehemiah was criticized regularly and consistently. Martin Luther still criticized. Any game changer always criticizes. Change anything in your life, your circle of friends. Someone's going to be criticizing you because you're going against the status quo. So Nehemiah's building this stuff, and detractors start coming around. They're saying, you can't change this. What are you doing? That's not going to last. That's not going to continue. My goodness, if a fox jumped up on that wall, it would break down. It doesn't have staying power. We started Crossroads 15 years ago. No one thought it would work. No one thought it would last. No way you can do something when a denomination doesn't start it. No way you can do something that's unusual that people haven't seen before. No way you can have a pastor not wear a suit when he preaches. Oh, I did last week. That was pretty nice. Never again. Never again. No way you could do all these things. And boy, my goodness, what do you know? God has worked. And by the way, you know, just because it's big doesn't mean God has worked. Let me just say we don't get as much criticism as we used to because people say, well, gosh, it's kind of hard to argue with success. Sure, you can argue with success. Just because something is big doesn't mean God's involved. Honestly, I mean, don't make no question about it. God is involved here. He is involved in your life. He's caused these things, but our numbers are not validation. There's a lot of things that are big. There's a lot of ideas that a lot of people believe that have nothing to do with God. Nothing to do with God. Now, having said that, I'm pro-big. I'm pro-big. And when is Crossroads big enough? When every single person in the Cincinnati region knows their creator. Crossroads is big enough when every single person knows that they're a treasure child. And I don't care if it's coming to a Crossroads site in Oakley, Mason, Florence, other ones we do, or the other churches that are existing all around the region. It doesn't matter to me. Doesn't matter at all. But we will not stop growing because we are dissatisfied with the status. I am wrecked. We are wrecked when someone does not know their creator and does not know their treasure, does not know the grace and the love of God. And doesn't matter how people devalue it, how people think it can't work. No, we work about it. We have a mind to work, a mind to work. And as Nehemiah is building and working and making advances, the detractors try to get him off focus. Here's what it says in chapter 6. His detractors come and they say, come, let us meet together. I find that one of the common ways that people try to distract the people of God is getting them in meetings. It's getting meetings. Or let's have a white paper about the slavery issue. No, we don't need more freaking white papers. We don't need more brainstorming sessions. And yes, let's have prayer meetings, but let's pray because it's fueling us to actually do something. So they're actually saying to them, hey, come down. Let's meet together here. Let's just talk about this new thing you're doing. Nehemiah says, I'm doing a great work, and I cannot come down. Why should the work stop while I leave it and come down to you? No matter what you are changing, if you're changing your marriage, if you're changing your education, if you're changing your business, no matter what, there will always be people who try to get you off the wall. People try to get you off making progress, try to get you down off of the great work that God is asking you to do. Don't do it. Don't do it. Stay on the wall. Nehemiah said, I'm not getting off the wall. Not getting off the wall until it's done, because I was wrecked. I'm working it, and I don't expect it to be easy. And you know what? It's not been easy. We've had issues. We've had issues over the last period of time. I've always had issues. But yet we go forward because we say, no, I'm not getting off the wall. Gandhi put it really well. Gandhi was a game changer in his own way. Here's what he said. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. I like that. I just want to encourage us, man. If you've been on the wall in the Game Change campaign, just stay on the wall. And I just want to gently say, too, some of us were wrecked, but we never actually got on the wall. Of all the commitments we've had, 25% of everyone who committed to that $48 million hasn't started. That's called at risk. 25% of everyone's committed has not started fulfilling, hasn't paid a dollar towards their commitment. Now, we never ask anybody to commit to that. We never say we assume it's going to come in 3 installments or 36 easy installments or whatever. You know, we never. So, you know, some of us in here go, yeah, that's all what I always planned. I always knew in 2 years this or that. Wonderful. No one's sitting in judgment at all. I'm just spelling that out to a lot of us to say we know there's a percentage in there that just hasn't gotten started, hasn't had a mind to work about it, have had money to go to movies, but haven't had money to start on that. And it's also a reason why we're trying to enlist. Gosh, the work is big. It's incredible stuff, and we need anybody who God has brought to Crossroads, who's called to this, to step in and have a mind to work about it. And it's not about moralism. It's not you should, you should, you should. It's about a connection with God, worshiping with God. The last several chapters of the book of Nehemiah is all about how the nation of Israel connects and worships God. This should be a spiritual journey because we should be connecting with the heart of God. It's not about Crossroads efforts, our elbow grease, what you do. It's about what God is doing in and through us. It's always about Him. It's noticing something could be different, and it's because God enables us to see it. God gives us the energy, and God meets us all along the way. Where is your life going? Really, have you thought about this recently? Where is your life going? What is the mark that your life is going to lead? A lot of us, we think this is a successful life. I get a good education, get a job, get a spouse, get some kids, get them a good education so they can get a good job, and then they can get a spouse, and then they can have kids, and somewhere along here I retire. And, you know, that whole thing, by the way, that's not a bad plan. I'm actually on that plan. I like that plan. You know, I like that plan. But let me tell you something. You can do that without God. You can do that and have zero help from God. You can be atheist and do that. You can, anybody can do, well, not anybody, based on your family and life circumstances, it might be harder for you to do that than others. But anybody, that is not a game changer. That is not a life of impact. That is not a life of significance. It starts when you see something other people haven't seen and you are wrecked. You're wrecked, and you alter your life, and you work about it. And while you work about it, you always recognize it's about God, it's not about me, it's about His energy, it's not about me. One of the more severe and most embarrassing times when I was wrecked happened several years ago. When Libby and I came to Crossroads to start with first staff members to start the church, 11 people had invited us to do this, and it never started the normal way. I mean, it's amazing when I hear things about how people think that Crossroads is funded. We never had a denomination fund us. We've never had some corporation. I've even heard there's some shell corporation that funds Crossroads. Never had. That'd be nice. If you want to start one and do that, that'd be great. But we never had some corporation do that. We've never had some phantom fat cat do it. In fact, if you took a look at everybody who's committed to the Game Change campaign, you wouldn't know a single name. There's not a single name you would know who's committed to the Game Change. Not some CEO of some big company, not someone. There's not a single solitary one. There isn't. The way that God has always funded the work here at Crossroads is by average people who have average jobs. Always. It's actually been a game changer. And when we came here, it started because 11 people said, we're going to cover your salary for a year. No matter what happens, we're going to cover your salary for a year. I said, we're going to give a bit more to make that happen. If we need to, we're going to tap into the equity of our homes. Even if we need to do it, we're going to tap into retirement. Fortunately, they never had to do that. But it was a game changer. 11 people changed the game and invited us here. And that actually has continued on. I was very generous to us. And Crossroads has always been very, very generous to us. And I had one really bad period where my mind was just kind of messed up. It happened several years ago. The one thing at Crossroads I have nothing to do with financially is setting my salary. Never been involved with that, never have, never will. There's a team of volunteers, the Board of Spiritual Directors that oversees everything here at Crossroads, and the thing that they do that no one else can do and I can't do is figure out what I should get paid. And they've always, you all have been very generous with us, always been very, very thankful for it. And there was a period, though, a weird period. I'm not sure what exactly happened, but there was just sort of a black hole of information, right? It was before the economy had tanked, and I went a few years without any salary increase and a few years without knowing, will I ever get one? Is this just sort of where I am right now, and I'll go on forever? And which that's okay, but, you know, you just think through, I'm wondering, I'm a bit confused about how that all works. And then after a couple of years, few years, they said, well, we're going to do a salary benchmarking thing. We're going to figure out where you should be, where we want to take you. We're going to do this big analysis. I'm like, okay, cool. So this was going on for a while, and I kept coming into board meetings every month going, okay, I wonder if they're going to tell me what's going on. I wonder if they're going to tell me what I can expect. I got kids I'm going to have to put through college, these kind of things. And each month that wasn't on the agenda, I'm going, what's going on? I'm getting more angst. I'm starting to get bitter, which is, I look back on it as ridiculous. I mean, I don't have any problems. Never had any financial problems. My biggest problem has been when I forget to take my iPhone to take a dump. That's the biggest problem I have. You know what I mean? I mean, you got no problems when that's the only problem you can think of. I mean, for the most part, life for me has been good. But nonetheless, I'm like churning on this. So I go to a meeting with a bunch of different pastors here in Cincinnati, and there's a woman who's speaking, and she's talking about the crisis that's happening with many of our kids in our city. And she says this, I remember as clear as day, does it bother you the kids go to bed hungry in our city? She said, does it bother you the increasing numbers of kids do not have a mom and a dad? Does that bother you? And I internally, immediately said, no, what bothers me is I don't know what's going on with my salary. I thought that immediately, and as soon as that thought crossed my mind, it was like the Spirit of God inside of me helped me realize, and it bothers me that that's what bothers me. It bothers me that I'm so bothered by salaries. So when I have no idea, God, what is wrong with my heart? It wrecked me. I noticed, what is my problem? I'm not feeling empathy for people who have real problems. I'm not feeling passion for people who are separated from you, even if they have physical abundance, they are spiritually separated, and it wrecked me. It bothered me that it didn't bother me. I believe God is doing this in increasing ways in his people. I want to give you the permission to be bothered. You should have permission to be wrecked over the next 6 weeks. You should be wrecked. We should be wrecked. When God is moving in us, he has us feel the same things he feels. And whatever your emotional bandwidth is, I want to encourage you to allow God to have you see what everyone else sees, except you want to see it different. You want to be a game changer. Father, I pray this happens. Pray this happens. We don't want to be normal. I don't want to be normal. I would like great things. I know a lot of us would like to have great things. We thank you for the great things you've given us, and we want more of them. Wonderful. You do those kind of things with your children, but we don't want that to be our focus. I want your heart for the things that are broken in this world to be our focus. I want your grace and the amazing character you have to be our focus. Help that happen here in this journey. I pray these things in your name. Amen.